One of the worst persecutions in the church's early life happened in the year 303 when the Roman emperor Diocletian made it illegal to go to Mass. Illegal to go to Mass. And there was a group of 46 Christians in North Africa in a place called Abitine who refused to listen to the emperor Diocletian. They freely admitted to their persecutors that they would not stop celebrating the Mass. The trial took place before a man by the name of Anulinus, and he was amazed that these Christians were continuing to go to Mass, even in light of what the emperor had decreed and because of what they would experience. Well, one of these 46 men was a man, actually it wasn't just men, there were also children present, but one man by the name of Emeritus, who actually hosted the Christians in his home where they celebrated the Mass, when asked why he had violated the emperor's command, this is how he replied, "Sine Dominico non possumus," which means, without Sunday, we cannot live. Without Sunday, we cannot live. What was Emeritus referring to? He was referring to the Eucharist. And this Eucharist that the emperor had declared illegal, they said, no, we're willing to be tortured. We're willing to actually die because without Sunday, we cannot and will not live. These early brothers and sisters in the faith understood what Vatican II stated so clearly when it said that the Mass is both the source and the summit of our life as Christians. And I would like to suggest to you this afternoon that our readings today help us to understand that without Sunday, or Saturday evening for that matter, we cannot live because, first of all, the Mass is heaven sent. Secondly, the Mass is the source of our life. And thirdly, the Mass is the summit of our life. These early Christians in North Africa understood that the Mass is heaven sent, that it is our source and our summit. So let's take each of these three ideas and reflect on them in turn. In the reading from Hebrews, we have the writer talking about two mountains. First of all, there is Mount Sinai, where Moses was given the law. And he depicts this mountain actually in a terrifying way, where the holiness of God is such that the people said to Moses, "We don't want to hear from God anymore. It's too terrifying. You speak to us on behalf of God." But then the writer goes on to say, "We have not come to Mount Sinai. We have come to Mount Zion." And he's saying this is a very, very different matter. This is a very different mountain. And he actually says it is the heavenly Jerusalem. And there he says, we find innumerable angels in festal gathering. There are the saints referred to as the firstborn. And of course, God is there and Jesus, who is the mediator of a new covenant. But here's the thing. He's talking to people who are still alive in this world. And he says, you've come to the heavenly Jerusalem. You've come to Mount Zion. How is that possible? Well, the key is in that phrase that Jesus is the mediator of a new covenant. And when we hear the word new covenant used in the New Testament, and we've mentioned this before in the context of homilies, the new covenant is always in relation to the Mass. And so here the writer to the Hebrews is saying, when we come to Mass, we actually come to the heavenly Jerusalem, because here the new covenant is made present to us. Indeed, at the end of Hebrews in chapter 13 at verse 20, the writer underscores this by talking about the blood of the everlasting covenant. And so what the writer to Hebrews wants us to appreciate is that when we are here at Mass, heaven has come to earth. And because the Mass is heaven sent, we cannot do without Sunday. But secondly, the Mass is the source of our lives. You'll remember that at that point when the offering of the gifts are presented to the Lord, that the priest, in offering the bread and the wine, says the following words: "Fruit of the earth, work of human hands. fruit of the vine, work of human hands. Now, what is needed in order for wheat and in order for grapes to grow? That they need to have the very substance of the earth. They need dirt. And from the very earth, from the very ground, the wheat and the grapes grow, and they are turned into bread. They are turned into wine. And these are then taken, they are blessed, they are then transformed into the body and blood of Christ. Now, I want you to keep in mind Adam. And back in Genesis chapter 2, we are told that Adam is made out of the dust or the earth of the ground. Now, the word ground in Latin is the word humus, from which we get the English word humility. And so the understanding that we have here is that these very simple, humble gifts of bread and wine are taken from the ground, and as the priest blesses them, they are transformed and changed into the body and blood of Christ. And just as the ground is the source of these gifts, so too we understand as people that the ground is the very source of our lives. And as we come attentive to the Eucharist, understanding and appreciating more and more that the gifts, the body and blood of Christ, is to be represented in our own lives, that we become Christ as we grow in humility, then there is the kind of transformation that takes place in our souls where that reading from Sirach is able to ground us because it humbles us. I just want to talk about this reading with you for a few minutes now. It begins by the writer saying, "My child, perform your tasks with humility. Then you will be loved by those whom God accepts. The greater you are, the more humble you must make yourself. So you will find favor in the sight of the Lord." Remember, I said that the word ground is the Latin word humus, from which we get the English word humility. People who hear what Sirach is saying have a right understanding of themselves. They are people who understand that just as the bread and wine of the Eucharist are creatures that are transformed by the Creator, so too we are creatures who, when we grow in this kind of humility, come to have a right understanding of our strengths, of our weaknesses, our gifts, and our shortcomings. It leads us to have a proper self-understanding, which is exactly the thing that the writer says next. "Neither seek what is too difficult for you, nor investigate what is beyond your power." To be people of true humility is to having a growing discernment to understand what St. Paul wrote in Romans chapter 12. "Do not think of yourselves more highly than you ought to think, but think about yourselves with sober judgment." Those who are growing in the kind of humility that Sirach speaks of, those who understand that we are taken from the ground and that we come from the ground and after we die, our mortal bodies will go back to the ground, understand the centrality of humility, the centrality of having a right understanding of ourselves, and the realization that what we want to do in this world is to grow in godly wisdom, which is what the writer of Sirach says next. "The mind of the intelligent appreciates proverbs, and an attentive ear is the desire of the wise." What are proverbs? They are short, pithy sayings. They're usually two lines long, and often they are a comparison where something in the natural world is compared with something in the spiritual world in order to help us understand how to grow in virtue and in godliness. And indeed, although we did not have this verse in our reading for today, right after this verse that speaks about understanding proverbs, Sirach actually gives us an example of a proverb. Let me read the proverb now. And it's in comparison. "As water extinguishes a blazing fire, so almsgiving atones for sins." Hear the comparison? Water puts out a fire. Those who are growing in generosity are people whose sins are being atoned for. Why? Because to be a person who's growing in almsgiving, to be growing in generosity, means that you're having a change of heart. You're becoming more God-centered, more other-centered, and less self-centered. And what is at the heart of sin? It is being preoccupied with ourselves. So there's just one example of a proverb that as we allow these words to penetrate into our soul, we can think, yes, as water puts out a fire, so generosity has a way of putting out the fire and the passion of sin. So here's the thing, that the second point that I'm making that I want to underscore, that not only is the Mass heaven sent, the Mass is the source of our life because we understand in the Mass what it is to be like the elements of the bread and wine. We offer ourselves in humility to God so that He can transform us. Those who know that the Mass is the source of our life are able to say with Emeritus, without Sunday, we cannot live. And this brings me to my third and final point. The Mass is also the summit of our lives. When those Christians in North Africa were interrogated about why they went to Mass, they said, well, Christians make the Mass, meaning that when we gather together, we form the community that is the community of the Mass. But then they said something even more importantly, not only do Christians make the Mass, but the Mass makes Christians. They understood that in coming to the Mass, Jesus was working in their lives in such a way so as to transform them to become a community of generosity. And that actually is the summit and the goal of our lives. That's why in today's gospel, there are two parables. The first parable is about a person who's learning to say, I want to take second place. I'm learning the way of not needing to be out front and needing to be number one. And then in the second parable, Jesus says that we are called to intentionally associate with those who are socially disadvantaged, the poor, the crippled, the lame, and the blind. And what these two parables try to convey to us through the use of story is that we are to put humility into practice by the kind of community that we are forming. And so as those Christians in North Africa said, Christians form the Mass, but the Mass forms Christians. They understood the application of today's gospel when Jesus says, those who humble themselves will be exalted, and those who live this way of humility will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous. I love what St. John Vianney said about humility. He said, humility is to the Christian life what the cord is to the rosary. It holds it all together. And when we think about the rosary with all of those beads, we can say that a community of humility is a community that is coming together in such a way that through that humility we are joined to Christ, we are joined to one another, and we anticipate now the very summit of our existence, which will be when we are in heaven, that we will live fully in a community that is governed by true humility. As we consider what it is to be Catholic Christians, we can go all the way back to the year 303. And all of those centuries ago, there were 46 Christians whose story we still remember today. And because the emperor said the Mass is illegal, that didn't stop them from going to Mass, because the Mass had been ordained by Jesus Christ, the one who is the author of the new covenant. May we be inspired by their example. May we be inspired to recognize that our lives, when they are grounded in humility, our lives, when they are grounded in the liturgy, our lives that are grounded in knowing that the Mass is heaven sent, the Mass is the source of our life, and the Mass is the summit of our life. People who truly know this and are being converted in this way will indeed say with Emeritus, sine Dominico non possumus, Without Sunday, we cannot live.